The Pacific Northwest has a history of publicly run electric utilities, Seattle City Light, for example. Recently, there's been a push for another kind of utility, a municipal broadband internet service. Advocates say Seattle's private broadband suppliers are too expensive and too unreliable. Last week, the city released the latest in a series of reports on the feasibility of building and operating its own broadband service. Michael Mattmiller is Seattle's chief technology officer.
It would cost between $460 and $600 million to build and would put the city's general fund at significant risk. So it doesn't look like this model is right for us at this time.
Michael Mattmiller, chief technology officer for Seattle. Christopher Mitchell has helped communities around the country build municipal broadband networks. Mitchell is director of the Community Broadband Networks Initiative. It's part of the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. Ross Reynolds asked Chris Mitchell what he thought of Seattle's conclusion that it's just too expensive to build its own broadband network.
The feasibility study showed that one particular approach for building out the network is not feasible, and that's the approach of trying to go everywhere all at once with a fair amount of risk, but a lot of potential payoff.
Well, the Seattle feasibility study was about a pretty big project, spending a lot of money hooking up the entire city, charging $75 for a very high-speed broadband. And the conclusion was it'd be really hard to do that. It'd be very hard to get enough people to sign up for it. Do you think that's a correct conclusion?
Yes, I do. And I don't know that it's entirely necessary for the city to go in that direction. I mean, we are seeing more investment from the private sector than I would have expected, but it's still very hard to get a high-quality internet product for less than $100. And that's where I think the city could really focus some effort.
The feasibility study also says there's kind of a built-in problem here. You build it. You offer broadband at a good price, and then Comcast or CenturyLink or the competitors just kind of cut you in price, and you suddenly find yourself competing with this huge corporation, and even though Seattle's big, not that big.
It's a problem for some. It's an opportunity for others. Residents of Seattle might enjoy having an extra few hundred dollars in their pocket at the end of the year because the prices are so much lower. The problem comes if you want the network to pay for itself solely out of the revenues of the subscribers. And this is where we're seeing more cities and even counties across the United States innovating a bit and saying, you know, we're looking to try and ease the digital divide. We're looking to supercharge jobs. We don't need the network to pay for itself entirely. We're going to build it in part out of taxpayer dollars and in part out of user fees, which is how we build our roads. And we're going to do it in that way. And maybe we'll have multiple providers competing on it.
You mentioned maybe not this approach that the feasibility study looks at, but maybe elements of it in a more incremental approach. Like what?
The one approach would be to take all the fiber the city has. I mean, Seattle City Light has a tremendous amount of fiber. The city has a tremendous amount of fiber already. Now, a lot of it isn't to places that we need it to be. And so you expand on it. In part, you expand on it when you're doing other road projects, other capital projects, or perhaps just to because you have, you set aside a few tens of millions of dollars a year, which is what Mayor de Blasio has just done in New York City to expand this infrastructure.
So instead of $450 to $600 million to do the whole hog, maybe do it in small pieces.
Right. You might start with going to a specific neighborhood, and there's three neighborhood pilot projects that are outlined in the study. And you might say, we're going to deliver some level of service here. And, you know, you may have a situation in which you have people living just outside of that zone. Like if I live two blocks away from that zone, I'd be figuring out how big of a check I could write, you know, just to get that to expand. And you may have more expansion that way. It's a slow growth, but one of the things that sets you up to do is to be ready in case there's money from the state, money from the feds, money from a foundation perhaps to expand internet access to low-income communities.
I'm talking to Chris Mitchell, director of Community Broadband Networks at the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, about the idea of how we could advance affordable broadband technology. What other ideas could Seattle pursue?
One of the things that the city's report covers is suggesting getting people more excited about a gig in terms of gig demonstration projects. I think that's a great opportunity for libraries.
And for people who don't know, what's a gig and how could one get excited about it?
You know, what I like about the gig is that I'm not going to tell you how many megabits per second it is because it doesn't matter. The point is, it's good enough for you to do whatever you want to do today. That's the point of the gig. And we love that term because it's a non-technical term. I mean, technically, it's a technical term. But really, it's about abundance and saying everything you want to do, you can do with a gig.
Give us a for instance. Those of us who don't have super high-speed internet now, if we had a gig, what could we be doing that we're not doing now?
The main thing really is how a household uses the internet. So if you have a gig to your household and you have kids playing video games, you have computers downloading podcasts, you have people streaming media to multiple devices, nobody really is hurting each other's consumption or ability.
There are people in low-income and immigrant communities in Seattle who really think that we need to do something on this. They're pushing for municipal broadband. You've looked all around the country at where these things have happened, and we might commonly think of broadband as, oh, that's something for techies, or that's something for people who want to download HD movies or things like that. But what difference happens in a community when it's accessible to all the folks, both low income and high income?
Well, I think one of the biggest differences is one of equity in schools. There's a real danger right now that kids that go home to high-quality internet connections, your middle-class and upper-class kids, they can actually learn faster and at a greater rate, and they have access to more materials than low-income students. And so we may see the gap between the low-income students and the communities of color and the more privileged students grow rather than decrease. This is a particular concern for urban areas like Seattle and my own St. Paul. So it's a tremendous opportunity to make sure that every child can go home and have access to educational materials so that they can, I think, you know, build the kind of economy we want in the future, have the kind of quality of life we want in the future, but really to just make sure that everyone has that opportunity to strive for the American dream.
Christopher Mitchell is director of the Community Broadband Networks Initiative. It's part of the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. He spoke with Ross Reynolds. You can hear more from Christopher Mitchell tonight at Town Hall Seattle.